Can you promise me one thing though, before we start?
Yeah.
If you did not like a movie, can you, instead of saying you recommend it, just maybe try saying like, it wasn't for me.
No, there is one in here that I just flat out say it's terrible.
And, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Prepare yourself for the terror. The prison of madness, where few enter and none return.
Welcome to Unsung Horrors. With Lance. And Erica.
Leave all your sanity behind. It can't help you now.
Welcome to another episode of Unsung Horrors. I'm Erica.
I'm Lance.
And this episode is a special bonus episode where we're going to be talking about the movies that we saw at this year's Fantastic Fest. So for folks who don't know what Fantastic Fest is, it is an annual film festival held at the Alamo Drafthouse here in Austin, Texas. It's one of the world's largest genre film festivals. And this was my third year. Lance, what about you?
I got to think about this. 2013 might have been my first year, or 14. So
seven or eight years,
yeah. Nice.
Okay.
And I skipped one, so not consecutive.
Okay, yeah. And then last year was completely online, and you were a champ for that one. You stuck through it with a lot of them, but I kind of gave up about halfway through.
The programming was a little rough, understandably, for an at-home festival. First time.
Yeah.
For a lot of festivals doing that. But yeah, I watched a shitload last year.
Yeah.
A lot of shorts, most of the features.
Yeah.
I wasn't as good this year.
Well, the movies were good, though.
The movies were way better than they were last year.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
Yes. Okay. So what Fantastic Fest did this year is they sort of had this hybrid model where the first week was in theater screenings. They didn't have as many as they normally have, and they were all at half capacity. So I went to a handful of these for the first week in theater. And basically I just said, okay, anything that's going to be part of the online or Fantastic Fest at home, I'm not going to see in theater. I'm going to save that for at home. So I'm going to go through the stuff that I saw in theater. And then Lance and I are going to talk about all the stuff that we watched as part of Fantastic Fest at home.
I thought it was very cool too, a Fantastic Fest, to release the at-home programming before the fest. That way you could plan like you did.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So I didn't be like, oh, great. Well, I could have watched that at home instead of, you know, and I do like the theater experience, but it's also like, it's a lot all at once. Like even after that week, I think I took one day off in the middle of it where it was been a few days and I was already sort of getting anxious where I was like, you know, the theaters are still half capacity, but just being around that many people again, I was like, ah.
Yeah, that made me a little nervous too. But I mean, I do wish I attended some of the screens because this year was no badge at all, except for the virtual. Mm-hmm. And anybody, even, you know, nobody who's ever attended Fantastic Fest could have bought a ticket, which I thought was cool to open it up to the public. Yeah, I was a little scared still.
Yeah.
You know, I should have caught like one or two screens, but yeah, I just waited for the virtual.
So yeah, I saw like maybe two movies per day max at the theater. And then say the majority of what I watched was online at home. And I even took a couple of days off of work just to like binge five or six movies in a day. So, but it was a lot of fun. And, you know, shout out to everyone at Fantastic Fest who put this together, all the programmers, everything like that. It was a lot of fun. A lot of great movies came through.
Nice. They had a few events, book signings and stuff.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. So I'll talk about that with a couple of the movies, actually.
Sweet.
But so I didn't go the first day of Fantastic Fest, which was opening day, and Titane was the opening movie. And the only reason I didn't was because that sold out too quick.
Right.
But I did actually end up seeing it at AFS that next week. So I did see Titane, just not part of Fantastic Fest. And I have to say, Titane is, it is
amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. It is probably my I mean, I haven't seen that many. I don't see that many movies. Like, if I look at my pie chart on Letterboxd, it's like a sliver. It's 2021. this year is a little bit bigger just because of Fantastic Fest. But it was fantastic. It's the exact kind of body horror that makes me uncomfortable. And if you can make me uncomfortable in a movie, then hats off.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm bummed. I haven't seen that yet in the theater.
It's at AFS. I think it got an extended run there.
Yeah, so, and it's at every Draft House location too.
Yeah, and there was like 10 people in the theater when I saw it at AFS, nice. So I was like, "Woo!"
I can't wait to see it.
So I kicked off my Fantastic Fest, and I think this is actually a really great way to do it with the documentary "This Is Gwar." And so I love Gwar. I can't name a single song or album right. by Gwar, but I saw them when I was a teenager. I was up front. I got the fluid sprayed all over me. It was a ton of fun. And this documentary, it's funny. It's heartwarming. It's nostalgic. It's really well put together. It balances out the interviews and archival footage really well without giving too much screen time to any one interviewee, which I think some documentaries don't do very well.
Right.
And it's just really cool to see how this collective group of like artist nerds, you know, like D&D players kept this alive and holding their interest for so long. And they're still going, they're still touring. I know a lot of people say like, it's not Gwar without Brocky, but one of the people that they interviewed, I can't remember. It was one of the band members that said something about that. He said, you know, no one ever says, yeah, ever since your grandma died, your family sucks, which I thought was great. So
were there any members there, or was this all in the
No, they were on tour at the time. So, oh, nice. But it was like a, you know, a mega Gwar fan, introduced it, which was great. And, everyone in there, I think minus like a handful of people were all like, woo, Gwar. So, that was a lot of fun. It was a good way to kick it off.
Nice.
And then that same night was the first secret screening, which ended up being Wright's new movie, Last Night in Soho, which I think is coming out the end of October in wide release. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to tell this little, I'm going to give a little story about this movie and viewing. So before I go in, I'm having a very nice conversation with this guy, Dave, about the thesis he's working on, horror movies, theology, things like that. I was like, yeah, this is why I like Fantastic Fest. You meet new people, you have really interesting, nice discussions. So then I go into the secret screening and I end up sitting a couple of seats down from this douchebag from New York who makes this joke about stalking me because apparently he was sitting a few seats down from me at Gwar, which I didn't notice. So I know. So somehow we get on the topic of Malignant, the new James Wan movie, which I haven't seen, but I said
the new James Bond movie.
Wan. Oh, Wan.
What?
Yeah. Right. No, Daniel Craig. Woo. So anyway, I told him, I was like, yeah, I didn't see it. My boyfriend saw it and he told me about it. And I was like, yeah, that's not for me. I don't want to see it. Yeah. And that he didn't like it. And so then this guy proceeds to say like, you know, oh, your boyfriend doesn't know what he's talking about. That movie was the best of the year, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, bro, you don't even fucking know me. You don't know my boyfriend. Just.
Yeah. This type of people are.
Yeah. It gets worse because then like he starts like, well, what kind of horror movies do you like? So I start rattling off a couple of titles. I literally didn't even finish saying Dawn of the Dead. It was like Dawn of the. And then he was like, oh man, I saw blah, blah, blah. And so every time he would fucking ask me a question, it turned into his conversation. And I was like, I fucking hate people. This is why I don't like.
Okay. You're not going into this movie in a good mood.
No, I'm not in a good mood for this movie. So Last Night in Soho is okay. My main problem with it, I think, was the introduction to it because Edgar Wright was there. He came in and introduced the film. Mm-hmm. And Tim League, he always does a joke with secret screenings. He was like, oh, we're going to watch some weird 60s French restoration movie or whatever.
I saw that video floating around.
Yeah. And so both Edgar Wright and Tim League made a big deal about not spoiling this movie. But honestly, it's really predictable. So I was like, what's the big fucking deal about the spoiler in this? Like, I feel like if you've seen a movie, you can predict the ending of this. So
I haven't seen the trailer. I wonder if that gives away a lot.
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. Okay. No, it, So kind of my notes on it, like, I saw one review that actually compared it to Repulsion, which I think is kind of accurate, especially when it gets sort of towards the end of it. It would be like Repulsion for normal people. Like, they needed something more palatable than that.
Okay.
Repulsion with a lot of music. And I don't mind Edgar Wright's taste in music. Actually, I liked a lot of music in this because it's all 60s music. It's all very everyone friendly. The narrative focus for me felt really off, and I can't really put my finger on it without spoiling it. So I'm going to kind of leave it at that. But yeah, I don't know. It's a pretty movie. It's got lots of, you know, neon reds and blues and purples. But I swear to fucking God, if anyone calls this a throwback to a giallo, I'm going to lose my fucking shit, because not a fucking giallo.
Right.
Just because it's got pretty colors does not equal giallo.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I might piss off some people here, but I've never really been a big Edgar Wright fan.
Yeah.
I like Shaun of the Dead. I think it's funny.
I like it. Yeah, I'm on the same boat.
But like when Baby Driver came out,
I fucking hate Baby Driver.
I couldn't stand that movie.
Yeah.
I do want to see a Sparks documentary
I want to see that as well.
But like everything else, I've just never been. I mean, Scott Pilgrim, it's a great, you know, interpretation, adaptation of the graphic novel and the comic book.
Sure.
But yeah, it doesn't have rewatchability value.
Like, yeah. So
when I saw that this was the secret screener, I was like, oh, that's a really good get for the festival.
It is. I'm happy for them. Yeah. And a lot of people were very happy that they were seeing the movie. And yeah. I was there like, oh, okay.
The second one, I was more excited.
Oh, yeah. When we get to the second secret screening.
That was a surprise. Yeah. Like, I did not see that one coming.
I was very excited for that. All right. So yeah, Last Night in Soho. I don't know. I guess if you're an Edgar Wright fan, you're going to like it. I just thought it was super predictable. So wasn't really for me. Next day, Freaks Out is an Italian superhero movie, but they're circus freaks. So like they have a girl who, if you touch her, she shocks you. She goes like full Dark Phoenix at the end. She has this reluctance about killing. It takes place during World War II. Sorry. She has a reluctance about killing Nazis, which can get really frustrating. But then it's like you have to think like, well, we're so far into the future that you look back at people who are reluctant to kill people in their time. That right. It's like I have to remind myself of that when I'm watching movies like that, where kill the Nazi. Fuck, what's so hard about that? But there's a wolf guy. There's a little person, Magneto, who's got a huge cock and jerks off a lot.
Okay.
And
he can control metal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and a bug guy, like he can control bugs, kind of like what's her face in Phenomena. So the villain is a six-fingered pianist who's also a Nazi, and he's trying to find these four superheroes, even though he doesn't quite know who they are, because whenever he'll huff ether and then he'll fall asleep and have these weird dreams about the future. And so he's seen what's going to happen, and he thinks he's seen Hitler killing himself. And he's like, we got to figure out a way to win this war. And so he thinks that these four people whose faces he can't see yet are the answer to that.
He's like the Professor X, kind of getting everybody together.
Yeah, but on the villain side of it. Like he doesn't, he wants to win the war for the Nazis. So like he's the villain guy. I had a lot of fun with it. I felt its length though, because it's almost 2.5 hours long. Wow. And I thought there was like some parts I looking back on, I was like, they could have taken some of that out, but there were some fun moments too with the pianist, because he sees into the future. He has heard music of the future, and so his piano concerts, he's doing a rendition of Radiohead's Creep and Guns N' Roses' Sweet Child of Mine.
That's cool.
Which was, you know, the audience took him a second to pick up on, but then when they did, they laughed at it. It was fun. So yeah, Freaks Out, I would recommend it. I think it was fun. And then after that was Lamb, the new A24 movie.
Yes.
Loved it. This is the most A24 movie that A24 can A24. It's like, they know me. 4 out of 5 stars. It's fantastic. I feel like everyone should see it. It's not going to be for people who need a lot of answers though, because there's not a lot of dialogue. It's a very quiet movie. and you're left guessing a lot of things, but also being able to fill in the blanks yourself is part of the fun with this. Yeah, but it's also like, it's got a lot to say about loss and family and what makes a family. So I really, really enjoyed it. Definitely recommend Lamb.
And Noomi was there, right? And the director?
Yes, they were both there.
Love her.
She's she was in another movie at Fantastic Fest, which I didn't see. Did you? I don't remember which one it was. Okay. But yeah, she was there. They were both super nice and they introduced the film. So that was fun. Then the next day is the day that I skipped. I actually had a ticket to go see VHS 94, but it was like 9 o'clock at night and the movie started at, I think, 9:45, and I was still in my PJs and I was like, you know what? I don't really want to see that movie this much.
It's already streaming right now.
It's I mean, I don't have Netflix or Shudder or whatever it's on, but I was just like, I don't really care enough about this series to get dressed and go to the movies. So I just refunded my ticket for VHS. So then the next day I did two more. This was a retrospective screening. It was Dance of Death, 1979, which is a kung fu comedy starring Angela Mao Ying with choreography by Jackie Chan. And it really shows. So this was a part of a pair of screenings for the new book, These Fists Break Bricks, How Kung Fu Movies Swept America and Changed the World. It's by Grady Hendrix, who did Paperbacks from Hell, which you know about.
Yeah, great book.
And Chris Poggioli. And I bought a copy of it for John for Christmas. So he doesn't listen, so I don't care if that's a spoiler for him.
Wait, what? What, John? You don't listen?
John doesn't listen to this. So what was really interesting, and the movie is a lot of fun to watch. It's nice to see like a woman, because it's choreographed by Jackie Chan, she's trying her best to be Jackie Chan, and she's kind of got that goofiness to her. So it was a lot of fun. But what was really interesting was when the authors were talking before the film is that there was a week in May 1973 where the top three grossing movies in America were kung fu movies.
In America?
Yeah. It was Fist of Fury, Deep Thrust, The Hand of Death, and The Five Fingers of Death. And these were beating out movies like, you know, Soylent Green, and I can't remember what else was on the list. But yeah, top three movies, kung fu movies, May 1973. But Dance of Death was a lot of fun. I gave it 3.5 out of 5. Really solid, solid kung fu comedy. And then after that was The Innocents, 2021, not a retrospective screening of the old Haunted House movie. This was Swedish, Norwegian, one of the Scandinavian countries. I forgot. But it's about four kids who discover that they have like this telepathic connection and abilities, but one of them wants to use it for nefarious purposes. The boy Benjamin, and this is not a spoiler because it happens in the very sort of the beginning of the film, he very graphically kills a cat in this film. And like the whole audience like fucking screamed when it happened. So, and nobody screamed when, like, spoiler, one of the kids dies, but like nobody screamed when that happens, but everyone's like really upset when the cat gets hurt.
Well, yeah. I mean, cats can't, you know, animal death is always more effective for me personally.
Yeah.
Cause you know, people are assholes.
Right.
At any age.
So yeah, he kills a cat at the beginning and I think I was taken out of the movie a little bit after that, only because every time he was on screen, I'm just sitting there fucking waiting for this kid to die because I hate him so much after that. Honestly, for me at least, it was one of the most unsatisfying endings. It's still a really good movie. I gave it 3.5 out of 5, but I was pretty unsatisfied with the ending of it. I will say this though, and you're not going to hear this from me very often. The kids were all great in this film and they were all first time actors, which I think might be why, because they haven't been like in the industry enough to be like smart ass spoiled little things. They're just like sort of being natural, I guess, maybe. Yeah. And there's one girl in particular who played the older sister of one of them and she's autistic and she can't speak, except one of the other girls she has a psychic connection with can speak to her telepathically. So she finds a way to actually communicate. So
cool.
I liked it. The Innocents, 3.5 out of 5. All right. Then the next day was the next secret screening.
Yes.
Now, I was concerned because I skipped the Insane Clown Posse documentary. to go to this. And I was like, this better be worth my time if I'm going to miss out on seeing the Juggalos. And the secret screening was Paul Verhoeven's new movie, Benedetta.
Yeah.
And there was a recorded intro from Verhoeven. He talked about the source material for the film and that about 50 to 60% of the film is true. Obviously, they have to take some liberties when you're telling a narrative story, though. Mm-hmm. Verhoeven said the word dildo a couple of times in his introduction, which was probably the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I loved this movie. It's exactly what you would expect from a Paul Verhoeven horny nun movie. But I almost thought it was more restrained than I was expecting. I think it's also a lot smarter than a lot of people are going to give it credit for, because it's a lot about, and I'm not a religious person at all, but this, the message of who you can get fulfillment from and how was very clear. And especially it being a female relationship made that even more interesting to me. So I right. thought it was really well done. It's got plenty of gore in it and that Verhoeven humor to it as well. So this was probably right after Titane was my second favorite movie of the year. This, I loved it. I think it's coming in wide release in December.
Good Christmas movie, it sounds like.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah, it's great. Definitely recommend Benedetta. Then after that, I saw Hellbender, which is about a teenage girl who lives with her mom in a very remote area of upstate New York. And she discovers her family's link to witchcraft. Put that in quotes, because I'm calling it witchcraft. They never call themselves witches. They call themselves Hellbenders, which I think is actually cool. And they even name the mom and the daughter, like, because it's just them, do all these things together. They even have their own band together and they call themselves the Hellbenders, which I think is a great name.
Yeah. Is there another Hellbender out there movie?
Maybe. I don't know.
What's the one with John Saxon? Like one of his last like horror movies he had made.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
It's
no.
Hell Something.
It's Hell Something. It's not Hellbender. I've okay. seen that and it's awful. Vinegar Syndrome has a release of that. Okay. And I don't care for that movie. So it's, I thought it was a really interesting mix of the use of the natural world and psychedelia. Like it has these moments where all of a sudden it's just like blurry psychedelic things happening and like how they take a mix of certain natural elements like moss and mushrooms and all these other things and can have certain powers and things like that. So Nice. It has these like spurts of humor in it that normally might be off-putting for me in a movie like this, but they're not overused. And I think they actually work pretty well. There are some points, I think, that it spoon-fed the audience where it could have left it up to audience interpretation, but it wasn't so overwhelming that took me out of it. So Hellbender, I really liked, gave that one 3.5 out of 5 as well.
Nice. High ratings.
Yeah. I honestly didn't have any duds in the theater. I mean, except for Last Night in Soho, which I wouldn't even call a dud. It's just not for me.
Right.
But I didn't get any duds until we get to online stuff. A couple more in theater. The Sadness was the next day, which, so this one, best horror film at Fantastic Fest. And not to be critical, but I don't think the name of the movie really fits with it because it's a virus zombie movie. It was made in August of 2020 in Taiwan. And it's funny because there's even references to politicizing the virus that's going on at the time. Like very, I don't know, it might get dated eventually because of that, or it could just be this like time capsule of this period in our life. Right. It could go either way, I think. But it's, I guess the closest you could compare these, I'm going to call them zombies, but they're not technically zombies because it's more like 28 days later where they get infected with rage.
Right.
But instead of just being like bloodthirsty, they are also super, super horny and they will fuck anything. And I mean anything in this movie. And so it's super fast paced. It's over the top gore. It's depraved. It's offensive. So I liked it.
Right.
And normally I wouldn't like a movie like this because, you know, the whole like, oh, the whole, that's another virus zombie, fast paced, whatever. But because it goes so far, I'm like, oh, this is going to offend people. Now I like it.
Yeah. I heard some comments online after this movie about, you know, so you like the rape scenes and the sexual abuse scenes and stuff. But to me, I'm kind of in the boat in the mindset that you just said, where like if it's so offensive and it goes all the way and it's clearly the intention, I'm on board. I want to see it.
Yeah. I mean, I know like a lot of people now are like veering away from using words like cunt and things like that. And like, I mean, there's a woman in this who gets skull fucked at one point. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm into this. So someone during the Q&A with the director afterwards made a comment about a woman being, about all the women in it being raped. And he clearly didn't get that this is obviously what would happen in a situation like this. So it's not like he's doing it for shock value. He's actually saying this is what would happen if we actually had monsters like this. And it wasn't just women being raped, like men were getting raped. And like it was it was equal opportunity fucking.
Respect.
All over the place. So I liked it. I'm not sure when it's coming out or where, but I liked it.
Yeah, it played at another festival, a couple festivals, I think. So it's hopefully somebody picks it up.
Yeah, I would think it will, especially because it won the award for Best Horror Film. So yeah, the Sadness, definitely recommend. I think I gave that 3.5 as well. Okay, and then the next one was another retrospective called Snakes. Lars Nielsen introduced this one. Well, him and Tim League introduced it because this is one of the write-ups in their new book, Warped and Faded, that's coming out. Mm-hmm. They were doing a book sign, or he was doing a book signing of it. I didn't pick one up because I pre-ordered it, which I wish I knew they were selling here because then I could have got it there instead of having to wait till November. But
yeah, for sure.
Oh, I would have picked yours up too. But I mean, anyway. So it was a Weird Wednesday movie from back in the day.
I saw that Weird Wednesday.
Did you?
Movie.
Okay,
yeah.
So you know
that was Lars's last Weird Wednesday programming. Yeah. Did they hint on like what happened that night or tell about what occurred
during the actual screening itself?
Yeah.
Oh, that they had never seen it before and they just showed it.
No, that afterwards, since it was Lars's last, you know, he was moving on to, I don't know if he was like already signed on and moving to AFS at that point, Austin Film Society, but it was his last programming and Tim was there, Tim League. And then they did like, they brought out a band after it ended. They brought out like it was like from like Austin High or something. It was pretty late at night too. And then they came out and there was like a conga line and we followed this conga line down to Mugshots, where Tim League was buying drinks for everybody.
Okay. Yeah. I think they did reference that.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was fun.
I'm bummed I missed that. Before my time, it was then.
Yeah. It was a while. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. Do you remember the movie?
Yeah, vaguely. I vaguely do.
So it's a...
I got pretty drunk that night.
Deep South movie about this guy, Snakey, who has snakes. It's not a snake farm, essentially, but anyway, all these townspeople are being super mean. I'm really oversimplifying it, but all these townspeople are being super mean to him. So he brings them back to his farm and kills them in all different ways involving snakes and then pushes their cars off of a cliff. And he does it like 5 times in a row. So like the first time he does it, you're like, yay, kill that person who was mean to you. And then the second time you laugh because he's like, oh, he's doing it again. And then the third and then the fourth and then the fifth time, the audience is just like, can't even stand it. They're like, what the fuck is happening in this movie?
It's a big pile of cars.
Yeah. It's comically repetitive, but it was probably one of my favorite in theater experiences during Fantastic Fest.
Nice.
Which would be expected with a movie like that. So yeah. That one was a lot of fun. And then the last movie I saw in theater was called Saloum. Which is a Senegal action thriller with sort of a witchcraft element to it. Oh, I can't remember who introduced it, but she said, like, don't think of Wakaliwood with this movie. This is not that type of movie. It's got nothing against Wakaliwood. I love Wakaliwood, but this has production value, has, you know, clearly has like a script and things like that happening in it.
Right.
It lost a lot of steam for me toward the end, but I still liked it. I think I gave it 3 out of 5. And it's basically about a group of three mercenaries called the Hyenas, and they're helping one guy escape along with some gold that's been stolen. And they make an unexpected stop in this place called Saloom, where we find out that one of the mercenaries have a history with it. And so he kind of purposely wanted to make a stop there. So it's got some good action, and like the witchcraft element, there's like these spirits that are connected to the area, and the way that they're represented, they look like a swarm of bees mixed with fire ash, but in the form of like a devil. So it's constantly moving.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. And like, they're like the way that they shot them, and I know it was low budget, but the way that you see them just running by really quickly, and so every now and then you catch a glimpse of them, I thought that was really, really interesting, really neat. So done with theater. So getting into online. First day, I watched After Blue. I know you saw this one too.
Yeah, that was one I watched.
I don't even know where to start with this movie. It was called the sci-fi western by a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, this one, I mean, visually it's like gorgeous to look at.
Yes.
And that's pretty much all it goes for, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. There is some sort of story happening, but you get lost not only in the runtime. This is another one that's over 2 hours long. It's 130 minutes. You do feel it. It gets exhausting, but it's just not boring because everything that's happening is really fun to look at.
Yeah.
And, you know, the scenes obviously linger way too long, but there's a lot to look at. So I stayed for the whole time at home. I watched it all. It kind of reminded me, I mean, visually of what we'll talk about later is Mad God, which is the story is just kind of thrown out. Any type of narrative is kind of thrown out the window, and I just get lost in this world. But yeah, overall, I liked it. One of my favorite parts was, so there's these women. I mean, like I said, I can't summarize it.
I mean, there's women who are, they've basically abandoned Earth and are on a new planet. And when they got to the new planet,
there's no men
because for whatever reason, they could not survive on that planet. But the women survive, except as a effect of the atmosphere, they grow extra hair.
Yeah, that's what I like too. I like, because they get like these neck beards.
Yeah.
And they have this really cool, like, it's like a laser straight razor.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes this really awesome noise, like this burning shaving.
Yeah.
Good sound design. But yeah, it was, and the credits, the end credits are really badass too. I don't know if you noticed them, but they're real wavy.
Mm-hmm.
The whole movie is completely trippy, just a complete trip fest. And it's French, right? Mm-hmm. After Blue, Dirty Paradise. I mean, I don't know if I'd recommend this one.
If you like art house films, so my brain went to a few other directors for reference. Jean Roland, Ken Russell. It reminded me of a movie I saw recently called The Hourglass Sanatorium, 1973. So oversimplification, Jean Roland, Ken Russell have a baby, and then it gets adopted by H.P. Lovecraft. Maybe.
Yeah, that works.
I would recommend it if you are someone who is there for the visual aspect, because this movie definitely delivers on that. I did feel the length a little bit on this one, though, for sure.
Maybe I would recommend it to Britney Spears fans, too.
Oh, jeez.
So I don't know why, because, you know, I had been reading a little bit about her whole career and everything about her conservatorship.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it almost felt like a metaphor for like her career. Like it's an allegory of Britney Spears' career, because all the weapons in there have designer names. There's like the Gucci.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
There's a couple of others that I just can't think of right now.
Yeah, there's a...
And it's all about death. The main villain is, her name's Kate Bush. So it's death to Kate Bush.
Right, yeah.
But to me, the main actress, the lead is this blonde woman, and her mom is involved, and all these people are kind of telling her what to do, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just kept thinking of, okay, this is about Britney Spears, right? I'd be that asshole, like, Q&A guy if the director was there. Excuse me, does this have anything to do with pop culture, specifically Britney Spears' career?
You get it, like, he wouldn't even answer.
Boom, or she wouldn't get even out answer. Of here. Yeah, I just...
All right, the next one I watched online. I didn't see that you watched this one, and I don't know why I watched this one. I should know. I should fucking know myself better than this. But there's someone inside your house.
That one's streaming too.
It's already. On Netflix. I think it's on Netflix. Yeah, it's on Netflix now. And yeah, I watched it a week before it was coming out on Netflix. And I don't know why I wasted my time with this fucking movie.
Bad.
It's just nothing interesting, nothing new about it. It's just throwback 90s slasher horror. And what was my Letterboxd review? Something like, the only thing less interesting than this movie is poetry written by a teenager, which this movie has. Yeah, I didn't care for it at all. I think I gave this one 2 stars. So what about Barbarians? Did you watch that one?
Barbarians. Oh, no, I didn't watch it, but I guess I could talk about it. It was a screener for South By that we didn't
program.
So I did watch it as a South By screener. I didn't enjoy it. I mean, I didn't think it has Ramsay Bolton from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, yeah.
He kind of plays the hero, which is tough to believe after watching Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like a home invasion that it starts off really, really cool, atmospheric, has a lot of like, you know, there's like a, I think if I remember, he's running in a field like behind his house and he comes across a dead fox. And there's this building, this building of dread and this tension that you're like, okay, something's going to happen. And then it turns into this home invasion, gets kind of comedic. All the guys are kind of, you know, bros and trying to be real macho. And it doesn't really come to a nice ending. Yeah. From what I remember, I didn't enjoy it very much.
Okay. That's fair. Let's see. I watched The Taking, which was a documentary about the Monument Valley. And this is by the same director who did 7852.
Oh, yeah.
And Memories, Origins of Alien, which I saw at Fantastic Fest 2 years ago and I liked. So, like I said, it focuses on Monument Valley and specifically like how it was used in Westerns. And it focuses a lot on John Ford movies and sort of landscape fetishism. Like you don't even realize like how often Monument Valley like is in, I don't know, Looney Tunes commercials and other Hollywood, like it's all over the place.
In full Technicolor.
Yeah. It also kind of touched on John Ford Westerns and their impact on the Navajo Nation, which I assume is the basis for the title because they basically came in and appropriated the land from them. And we're hiring a lot of the Native Americans to be extras in the films. It felt like they should have touched more on that. Like I didn't like it as much as 7852 or Memories because I don't feel like it had a clearer direction. Like I like both ideas. Like if you just focused on how the Westerns impacted the Navajo Nation there, or you just looked at the fetishism of this particular area. But then if you do the latter, I don't know that you can't not touch on how it affected the Navajo Nation. But I don't really feel like they did a good job. It felt like an afterthought, I guess, in bringing that aspect up. I don't know.
Did it make you want to go watch a bunch of Westerns?
No, it didn't. I mean, I like spaghetti Westerns, but I have zero interest in seeing any John Ford Westerns. It's just not... Like I'm watching these and I'm not like, yeah, that looks good. Like, I'm just like, I'm good. Especially kind of after watching this and getting a little more history behind it, I'm like, I kind of really don't want to watch them now. And then Zalava, which was an Iranian possession film that doesn't actually show any possession, which is fine because it's more about mob mentality and sort of clinging to old superstitions. It's set in 1978 and it's basically about a village who is convinced that certain people are possessed and like the police chief is coming in and trying to convince them and there's not a possession. You guys are just fixated on your old ways. And then they have a exorcist come in and pretend to capture the spirit in this glass jar. I mean, it was okay. I don't remember what I gave it, maybe 2.5, but I wouldn't necessarily go out of my way to watch it. But it was interesting that it was an Iranian film about possession. So, I mean, that's a good thing about Fantastic Fest is they bring in movies from all over the world. You know, I saw an Iranian film, a film from Senegal, you know, French movies and all over the place. So, but I think one of my favorite movies for the day, and I know you saw this one too, was Number 10.
Yes. Yeah. That was my first movie that I watched.
Oh, okay.
So that was a great way to kick off Fantastic Fest at home. So this thing it's by director Alex von Warmerdam, who did Borgman, which that was at Fantastic Fest 2013, I think. I haven't watched it, but I really want to see it. Yeah. Apparently it's kind of in the same type of nature where it's kind of a dark comedy, but it gets really, really dark and interesting. Drafthouse Films actually picked that one up.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a Dutch director and screenwriter. And this number 10. So the first half is kind of like this dark comedy.
Yeah.
About like this theater, they're putting up this production in a theater of like a small town, but it kind of focuses on, you know, infidelity and revenge and control because the director's wife is sleeping with one of the actors, and the actor is who's having this affair is dealing with stuff with his daughter, and his daughter's following him, and there's just so much elements just going on where. And there's a lot of humor in it. I mean, it's funny. The director's really funny. Like how he starts kind of exacting his revenge on, you know, changing parts and lines.
Yeah.
And then it turns just like into this real, there's a moment of violence that kind of switches the whole thing around. And it turns into this crazy, like existential science fiction concerning like religion and mankind. And I mean, the more I think of it, the more I liked it. Like I would probably, I definitely wouldn't want to watch this again. Mm-hmm. I hope it gets picked up. I'm sure it would because the director, looking at his other movies, they seem to all have distribution, but I loved it. And then it has this ending that it's like forever ingrained in my mind.
Oh yeah.
It's just beautiful, but very, you know,
dark and
controversial. Yeah.
I cheered. I was oh, hell yeah.
And it's great. I mean, even after the credits, it kind of go, I don't know if you stayed, but after the credits, it goes back to that certain image and it just kind of stays there for a good, like minute and a half, 2 minutes. And I'm just like, yes, this is well, okay. What's next? What am I watching next? Yeah. This is going to be a good festival.
I loved it. And beyond what we've just told you, don't read anything about it. Just go in as fucking blind as possible. And I think you really enjoy this.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Number 10. It's spelled NR.10.
Yeah.
10.
Yeah. It's not spelled out number, but NR.10. Yeah. Hard recommend on that one. I had a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, for sure.
What about Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes?
Okay. So I watched Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes.
Okay.
And this is a sci-fi comedy from Japan. The director's name, Yamaguchi. But this was about, apparently this film was, it's from a popular theater group in Japan called Europe Kikaku. But everyone was comparing this to One Cut from the Dead, which I really enjoyed.
Okay.
Even people were saying, one of the reviews I think said One Cut from the Dead meets Tenet, which I haven't seen.
Okay.
But I'm here to say no way to that.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, it was filmed entirely on an iPhone, which I applaud, and it's always cool for people to do. And in one take, it's under 70-minute runtime, but for me, it just dragged. So it's like a time loop film where these characters can see just 2 minutes into the future when looking into this monitor at a cafe that they work at, and the monitor they're looking at is coming from one of the employees' bedrooms who lives upstairs. So it's like his computer is 2 minutes behind.
Okay.
So it's clever, but to me it was clever for like the first or second time where they kind of, you know, display what's happening. Mm-hmm. Like here's what's occurring.
And
they keep running upstairs and coming back down and showing the different scenes and stuff and different angles of the same scenes over and over again. Oh. So like the fifth and sixth time I just got exhausted. So it's a 70-minute runtime, but I would say it's like 35 minutes times two, because a lot of the scenes are just played out twice, just from different perspectives, and you see more behind the scenes. So the cleverness just wore off at that point for me. Apparently I'm in the minority here, because this looks like I've seen a lot of top 10 from Fantastic Fest.
Really?
This one has been up there.
Huh.
People just loved it. We're gushing over it, saying it's the funniest thing they've ever seen. It's completely, it's just incredibly clever. And I'm just like,
do you think it would have worked better as just a short film then?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely say a short film. I mean, it's only 70 minutes, so it's pretty, the runtime is short, but I don't know. I felt it. It reminded me of, so a lot of people like the movie Worm from like 2 years ago, spelled with a Y.
Yeah.
I hated that movie.
Oh, okay.
And this is where this is how I feel Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes. I wasn't in a bad mood when I watched it. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing was going on in my personal life at that moment. I was just watching it thinking like, this is just not for me. It's not, I don't find it funny. I respect it. It was filmed on an iPhone. I respect the performances and the one takes. Some of the performances are pretty funny. I wouldn't recommend this, but I think everybody else who saw it would. So 70 minutes.
Okay.
Might as well check it out.
No. I mean, if you are vitriolic about it, like I'm not.
So if anybody's ever listened, you know, to previous episodes of Unsung Horrors, I recommend everything, regardless of how much I hate it, because I do think there's an audience for everything. So I'm going to just preface all this by saying you should seek it out yourself. Watch it. There's one movie I'll come up to where I will just, no.
Okay. I think that's probably going to be the same one as me, where I might go on a fucking tirade on that movie, but I might, maybe I'll try and be as nice as I can. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
So Midnight, South Korean thriller about a deaf mom and daughter, and then also a brother and sister who cross paths with a serial killer. I thought it was a bit longer than it needed to be, but I thought it was pretty tense throughout, and the villain was very hateable. I mean, that was a pretty solid thriller. I think I gave it 3, maybe 3.5.
I watched this one too, and this was a directorial and screenwriting debut for this guy, which I think is really impressive. Mm-hmm. Really well shot, really well paced. It had a really cool score because, you know, you do have these hearing impaired characters.
Yeah.
And the score would just kind of at points be real loud and just kind of shut off. Like, you know, like you're losing your hearing, and then it would kind of come back temporarily. And I thought it was really effective. Yeah. Everybody was incredibly in love with the serial killer, you know, saying stuff like, oh, slay me. Because he's a very handsome guy, but I think, everybody in the cast were good looking.
Yeah. I couldn't do it with that guy because, man, I can't keep up. Too much running.
There was so much running. I think I put that in my review. I was like, I am entirely too unfit to be either a serial killer or a victim of a serial killer because if I was in that movie, it'd be over in 2 minutes
because
I would be out of breath.
Yeah.
There is a lot of running through empty alleys, neighborhoods, crowded streets, just nonstop.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of, maybe that's even where I felt like the length a little bit, where I was like, I think it could have been trimmed down a little. But again, first time director, like this, I think it's a great debut for
them. Yeah, I would definitely check him out. I'm going to butcher his name, but I'm going to go and try and say it. Kwon Oh-sung.
Sounds right.
But yeah, I do recommend this one. It's really good.
Yeah, I think
It was South Korean.
Yeah. And I can't remember if they said it was coming out soon somewhere, but if it does, I would recommend it.
Same.
So a few more I watched on the second day online. Exorcism of God. Oh, I did not like this movie. Feels like Blumhouse gave the Wayans brothers movie to make a spoof of The Exorcist. It is not scary at all. It's got predictable jump scares. One thing that really bothered me was, so you know, in The Exorcist, Reagan takes a crucifix and, mm-hmm. you know, masturbate. Not
fuck right. me, but
fuck, you know, let Jesus fuck you. And she's bleeding. It's supposed to be this horrific event. And it is.
Yeah.
This woman, and it doesn't even like try to pretend like it's not ripping off The Exorcist. There's even a scene of like the priest arriving at the house under the foggy lamp and like stuff like that. There's crab walking. There's all the green bio, puke, all of that. So the opening possession, the woman, she gets up on her knees and she's masturbating. That's not something, you know, a woman just does when she's possessed. That is a normal, healthy thing. That she doesn't have a crucifix. She's not making herself bleed. She is just pleasuring. She's just touching herself. That's it.
So that implies that she's possessed in this movie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like, that's part of like, this is how a possessed person acts. Ooh, they pleasure themselves. I'm like, no, fuck you, person who wrote this movie. Women do that. Normal, healthy women will touch themselves for pleasure.
Yeah.
You don't have to be fucking possessed by a demon to do that. It is not a sin to touch yourself. Fucking hate this movie.
I 100% agree.
Fuck this movie. All right. Exorcism of God, hard no. Lucifer. I I don't want to talk about this one because I was not in the right headspace for this one. I didn't even give it a rating. I logged it. I watched it, but I wasn't in the right headspace for it. I saw one review which referred to it as Carrie directed by Terrence Malick. I think that's appropriate. I wasn't in the headspace for a quote unquote Terrence Malick movie. Yeah. So I'm going to revisit it. And then if I do, maybe I'll bring it up later in another episode, but it is a gorgeous movie. I will give it that. But story wise, I want to revisit it. So I'm not going to touch on Lucifer. Lucifer with a Z. And then Homebound is a very uninspired thriller about a woman who goes with her new husband to meet his kids at his ex-wife's house, but there's something wrong at the house. So if you saw The Lodge, it's kind of similar to that film. The ending is just very unsurprising if you've ever watched a movie with creepy kids. Like, it's just like, yeah, obviously that's what we were leading up to. But, oh, you're not going to show it? Great. Fucking thanks. Mm. Can I have that 90 minutes back?
Yeah.
No. Homebound, I wouldn't recommend that one. Samuel's Travels is a Latvian film.
Okay.
And it's about this guy, Sam. He's traveling in a foreign country to find his father. And he ends up accidentally running over a pig, but it doesn't die. He thinks it's dead though. So he's trying to bury it. But then this woman discovers him. And she ends up capturing him and taking him back to her farm where her and her father live. And they basically like keep him trapped there to work the pig farm. And eventually he starts communicating with one of the pigs and he sort of becomes assimilated there. And he sort of like finds meaning in his empty life in this pig farm. It's kind of told like a fairy tale where it's got like this narrator kind of telling the story over it, which normally I'm like, narration, but it's not internal dialogue narration. It's someone telling the story, right. Which is why it's kind of fairy tale-esque in that right. Way. But I liked it. I wouldn't go like hard recommend on it, but I had fun with it. It does have a pig that would put Babe to shame though. It's got the most adorable fucking pig ever in this movie.
So when you said that he kind of, you know, builds bonds with pigs or certain pigs, mm-hmm. Is there dialogue like the pigs are talking with him?
Yeah, like, well, the pig is, you know, oinking and its mouth is moving, but it's not actually saying words. Okay. But the guy is talking back to it like they're having a conversation.
It's not like Tommy Lee Jones's voice or something.
No. Prey Man, did you watch that?
Yes, it's Prey Man.
Oh, Prey Man. Okay.
It's an Indonesian like crime action thriller.
Oh.
This was another directorial and screenwriting debut, Randolph Saini. So I guess Prey Man is, it's a known thing maybe in Indonesia. It's kind of like a group, like a gang of people who kind of force people out of their, they go to these communities, force people out of their homes and kind of take over their houses and develop them for profit. And the lead character who's hearing impaired, he's one of the Prey Man in this, and his son witnesses a family friend be murdered by this gang of Prey Man. He doesn't do the murdering, but you know, he's part of it. Mm-hmm. He's kind of coerced into becoming this Prey Man. And so he realizes his son's in danger. So he kind of goes on the run, and this deaf father and his son kind of ends up retaliating against this group, this gang. So I was hoping for some pretty violent fight scenes because it's an Indonesian. And whenever I think of like, you know, recent Indonesian action, I think of, you know, Timo Jajito, is that how you say his name?
I think it's Jajito.
You know, he had some movies at Fantastic Fest in 2018. The Night Comes for Us, May the Devil Take You. The Night Comes for Us is really badass. Great fight scene, super gore.
He had one of the segments in the new VHS movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I had heard too. And so these fight scenes in Prey Man, while they're fun to watch, some of them are in slow motion action. Any gore or torture or like extreme violence happens off screen.
Oh.
So that kind of, you know, when it first happened, it's really strange too. It's like someone's murdered and the camera's on them and they're getting ready to show the murder and the camera just pans right past them and then it happens. And you get like a sound effect.
Mm-hmm.
And when it happened the second time, I was like, okay, something's up. So I read some, apparently the director was there in Fantastic Fest and he did a Q&A and somebody asked him about the off-screen violence, and he said it was due to like Indonesian censorship and law. So he had to do it that way. He does some really cool ideas because the deaf character, the lead character, he keeps having these flashbacks of something traumatic that happened to him as a kid, and how he lost his hearing and stuff. Mm. And there's a child death involved.
Oh.
By accidental suicide.
Oh, I'm not going to.
And it's not a gunshot. If people think it's a gunshot, like, you know, he lost his hearing because of a gunshot. Mm-hmm. It's not that.
Okay.
But yeah, it has like these, you know, it has dolls involved in like these flashback scenes. So some of the fight scenes, in order, I guess, to get past some of the censorship, when he's fighting and killing people, he sees these huge, basically furries, like men dressed up in huge like animal outfits. So you can show gore, I guess, in Indonesian law for that. So it's really well done. Oh, and there's this fantastic villain named Ramon the Barber, who's like super suave.
Oh, okay.
I do recommend this, called Preman, spelled P-R-E-M-A-N. I don't know who would pick it up or how it would get distribution, but
yeah,
it's fun for what it is. Not as violent as maybe you might hope, but.
Mm, that's fair. I know you watched this one. I didn't, and I can't even remember the entire title. Digital video editing.
Yeah, I have it.
Something,
here.
Something.
What is it? Digital video editing with Adobe Premiere Pro, the real world guide to setup and workflow.
Okay.
It's also referred to just as Adobe.
Okay.
Because I was like, this is insane. Yeah, it was one of the added extras maybe from a previous festival. It's 40 minutes. It's a South Korean comedy horror, and it's kind of J-horror.
Okay.
It's about a director and an editor who are off screen. Basically, the whole movie is the screen of a computer. Not the whole, but the whole, the majority of the movie is, it's the monitor of a computer. And it's this director who just directed this romance film and he's very proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And he hires an editor to help him edit the movie. So you see what they're clicking on. You see the scenes they're looking at. And the reason she's hired is because she's been recommended as like the best in the field. And as he was filming, this ghost just kept obnoxiously appearing in scenes in the background.
Okay.
So she's like, we got to, you know, what can you do? We can't have this ghost popping up in the back scene of this love story.
Yeah.
So, you know, she's like editing in like, you know, pictures of like a coffee mug or something. And he's getting... I found the most entertainment with the banter between them two, because he's basically breaking down all his scenes like, well, it's the emotional value, you know, of this character. You can't take that out. And she's like, just put a coffee mug in there, you know, basically not even caring about his movie. And then it just gets, you know, super, super crazy where you kind of, it's predictable where the ghost comes out of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when you get away from the monitor. You see the actors, and it gets violent. It's fun.
Okay.
It's worth the watch. 40 minutes.
Okay. So a few others I watched before, I think the last day that they released films, was Alone With You. It starts off kind of okay. There's a girl waiting in her apartment for her girlfriend to come home. But then weird things start happening and she can't get out of her apartment or talk to anyone except for a voice in the air duct. It goes in a very stupidly pretentious direction in the third act. What's a shame to me is that, like, somebody could have made like this generation's repulsion mm-hmm. during the pandemic, but then we get this and it's not very good. I didn't like it. It had, you ever seen Jacob's Ladder?
Yeah.
You know, and this still, like, I still remember it freaking me out to this day. Cause I think it was the first time I saw this, but like when either cars would pass by or the train and like the shaky head thing. It had that effect in it, which to me is just so overdone at this point that I'm just over it.
Yeah, it's a Marilyn Manson video.
Yeah,
it's
like, yes, that.
That's kind of what it's come down to.
Yeah, I forgave Jacob's Ladder because that's the first movie I ever saw it in.
Yeah, it was super creepy.
But yeah, this movie has it and I'm just like, oh God, not this. So I didn't care for Alone With You. And then I watched Cannon Arm in the Arcade Quest, which was a documentary out of Denmark. Now, I like arcade games. I like going to, you know, pinballs and playing pinball machines and playing some old Pac-Man or whatever it may be, but not at the risk of my own health, because basically this guy is trying to set a Guinness World Record for playing a certain game for 100 hours straight.
Okay.
And I know some people are wondering, like, how does he do that? They explain, like, how he can do that, like, when he's going to actually sleep and how he's able to do that and still keep the game going without going to the game over screen.
So this game has levels. It's not like you just keep playing the same thing.
They have levels and you collect lives. And so like, if you walk away for say 15 minutes, you're going to keep losing lives. And so they have to time it so that, okay, you can sleep for 15 minutes and you'll still have this many lives. So you can keep going kind of thing.
Okay.
Stuff like this just seems like a dick measuring contest to me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, isn't that what most like?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, even if the person who's going for the record seems really likable and doesn't have a huge ego, like the guy who's going for the record just seems like, yeah, I just want to try this out. I'm like, fucking why? Like, it's just.
It's like supersize me. Like,
yeah.
That whole thing, which I found gross.
Yeah. I just can't. And like, it also, like, the director slash narrator has these moments where he's like pontificating about like space and time and trying to connect it to this whole thing. And I'm like, fuck off. Like, it's just not like I shouldn't have watched this one. Like, I should know better than to watch a documentary about someone trying to beat a world record for playing a video game. I don't know what I was doing.
Do you remember what the game was called?
It started with a G. I don't remember. It wasn't Galaga. I know that, but it was something. I don't remember. I didn't like it. All right. Eyes of Fire. This was retro programming. Did you watch this?
I didn't. I wanted to, but.
Well, it's coming out in the Severin full core box set. So,
right.
Which I did order. So I probably should have saved this one for when I got that too. But, you know, it's Frontier full core. Preacher brings a group of people to a forbidden part of the woods. It's got witch people and mud people. And it's really good. I think I'll save. Let people kind of discover that one through Severin's release of that one. But I would definitely recommend it. It's been one that I've been wanting to watch for a while. And when I found out it was getting programmed for this, I was like, okay, I'm going to wait to see that. So.
Yeah, there's a real choppy version quality YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that one's been on my watch list for a while.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Let the Wrong One In. Did I watch? Oh, no, I made it 5 minutes into this before I decided I didn't want to waste my time on a horror comedy. Especially
yeah.
Like thick Irish accents and no subtitles.
I mean, with that title too, I was just like, well, pass. I wasn't really interested.
I was like, I'm going to give it a shot. And then I made it 5 minutes and I was like, nope. So I turned that one off. I know you watched this one because I think this was probably one of both of our favorites. Mm. Timekeepers of Eternity.
Yeah. So this one's good.
Mm-hmm.
This was, I forgot how long this was. Maybe 60 minutes?
It's just under an hour. Yeah.
Yeah. So what it is, it's director Aristotelis Maragkos,
sure,
Greek. But I never watched Stephen King's The Langoliers. Did you?
I know I saw it as a kid because a lot of it seemed really familiar as I was watching this.
Yeah, same. I mean, I saw some. So it was a TV series from 1995.
Mm-hmm, I think so.
I don't write down the year, but. Basically, this director, he just kind of chopped it up. It's all in black and white. If I remember, it's all in black and white. And he just does these really cool, like, paper effects. Just edits down to this hour long. It doesn't really summarize the story by any means or anything.
No, I feel like having some sort of context for what The Langoliers is might help.
Yeah.
But I don't think it detracts if you haven't.
Right. Yeah, because I did not, I looked at it, I read about it, and I was like, this sounds kind of right up my alley. So I didn't know anything really about The Langoliers. They do kind of set up what's kind of happening in the story a little bit. But it has a great cast. I mean, Dean Stockwell's in it, Bronson.
Pinchot.
Yeah.
Belky.
Yeah, and they really focus, perfect stranger. But they, this edited version really focuses heavily on his character and how just nuts and crazy and how amazing of an actor Bronson Pinchot is. I mean, everything he's in is fantastic.
Yeah.
True Romance comes to mind. Right.
Beverly Hills Cop.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, this is just, I had already mentioned when it was, what was it, After Blue? Visually, it's just something you get lost in. It's all original audio from what I can tell, but there's some and some scores used from the TV series, but there's some added original score.
Yeah.
Actually by a guy that I know that he lived in Austin for a while. His name's Randall Taylor. He goes by Amulets, but he moved to Portland a couple of years ago, but he provided the additional score And he does these really great tape loops. He just does all this cassette tape loop stuff.
That's cool.
And he, you know, he plays live with it and stuff. But I bought some cassette gear off of him like years ago because I wanted to record some stuff. But the music's great. I think in my review, I put, you know, turn this into a white noise machine. Just give me an audio file and an endless loop because this I could listen. Even though there's a lot of dialogue, to me, it sounds like, you know, like you're listening to like a Godspeed You Black Emperor record or something. It just puts you in this, put me at least in this calming mindset and kind of inspiring. Like it made me want to create or just work on something or sleep.
Nice.
I loved it.
Yeah. And then, so the way Fantastic Fest worked is online, they would release like 7 or 8 titles each day that were available for 48 hours. So last day, batch of releases. So I watched another documentary called Who Killed the KLF, which is a documentary about the band KLF, who was completely off my radar as that music wasn't what I listened to at that age. So, or even now, it's a well-made, interesting documentary and story about the band, I guess. They basically were huge in Europe for a few years in the early 90s and then completely just got fed up with everything and disappeared and deleted all their music, and it wasn't even available. Like the last thing that was, there was a note at the end of the film that said they finally released their movie on, or not their, they finally released their music on iTunes in January of 2021.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like they just literally disappeared off the planet. We're like, no, you can't buy our music. Cause they didn't sign with a record label. They were always just making their own stuff.
Right. Did I read that they burned?
They burned £1 million cash at some point as some sort of message about it. And then they actually filmed it and then were taking it around and showing the film and trying to make people understand like an abstract, you know, money is abstract. Like this doesn't mean anything. Like there's no less money in the world now, kind of. And I get it. But at the same time, I was just like, your music's not for me. Your ideology is not for me. I'm not super into it. So... Were you a KLF fan in the early 90s?
No, I mean, I when I read about the documentary, it was, it sounded really interesting. I never listened to them. Mm-hmm. I did, I saw one of their videos because I was like, how, do I know who these people are? And I did recognize one of the videos from like the early 90s.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't watch it. And I wasn't a fan of their music.
I guess if you're a fan, I'd recommend it. But it just, it was one of those things where I was like, oh, maybe I'll learn something new and interesting. Because, you know, I don't always want to watch documentaries about stuff that I'm just interested in. Like, obviously I want to watch the GWAR documentary, the Monument Valley one. I was like, oh, maybe like I'll get convinced to watch some John Ford Westerns. Nope. And then this one, like, not my.
Yeah, this one sounded interesting because they do sound like there's some sort of, they're artists at heart, kind of.
They are. Yeah. And I do appreciate that about them, but I'm good. Name Above Title. Did you watch this one?
I did watch this one.
Okay.
So this one was another like 60-minute one, Portuguese weird little thriller. It was, I didn't hate it, but it was just, it has a really strong opener.
Yes.
So it's a young woman and she's drunk at some trendy party that's taking place on this high-rise balcony. And she commits suicide by jumping over the railing. And this young man who just finished murdering a woman, he comes across her body. He just happens to be right there when it falls. And, you know, he runs to her, leans in, and she whispers words to him, and everybody has her iPhone out and are filming this guy. And he leans in and kisses her, getting blood all over his face, and he becomes sort of this internet celebrity, which that whole setup I thought was really cool because, and it kind of hit on it, but it gets really confusing. There's no dialogue, very little dialogue, if any at all.
Well, most of the, if there is dialogue, it's muffled purposely, like people far away from the camera are talking, but there's never like conversations really happening.
It's so, just a lot of looks and a lot of reactions, which, I found that intriguing too. But he gets kind of irritated because I guess he gets kind of thrown in the spotlight and paparazzi are kind of following him, and he's basically a serial killer.
Yeah, he's so like, this is not good for his day job.
he can't go out and do what he loves most. So I love the whole idea. It gets really weird at the end.
did not care for the end.
So where it's kind of spoilery, but he's essentially gets taken in. He's on the run because people figure out he's the serial killer. He goes and hiding in this cave, kind of, right? It's like, it reminded me of like where Pete hides his dragon.
Yeah.
His dragon. And there's these nuns in there, and they take him in and basically kind of treat him like a Jesus-like figure at the end.
Yeah, it takes a really weird Catholic turn that I'm like, I am not here for this. Like, it was kind of okay with this up until that point, and then it went that direction. I was like, nope, I'm out.
Yeah, I thought it looked great. I thought I had good atmosphere. You know, kind of weird hints of like American Psycho, kind of, where it's like this hot, everybody's super attractive in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the serial killer is incredibly attractive. So it's like, gave me American Psycho vibes for that. But yeah, with that runtime, I'd recommend it.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a great concept.
Yeah.
It just really fell apart at the end for me. But I mean, there's worse ways to spend less than an hour of your time than watching this. So do you watch Some Like It Rare?
I didn't.
Okay, I did. It's a dark comedy about a couple who runs a butcher shop, and they start killing vegans to supply meat for their butcher shop because it's like, you know, grass-fed beef kind of thing. Honestly, I was going in expecting to just be sort of indifferent to it. And I was like, I like this. It makes fun of the people who are like the diehard vegans who will just say, I can't kiss anyone who has eaten meat because, you know, it infringes upon my decision. Kind of like those fucking people. I'm like, all right, look, to each their own, but they get so preachy, and like the vegans in this are like destroying property and things like that. It's like, all right. Yeah.
It sounds like a South Park episode.
Yeah. It honestly, like, I mean, it kind of could be. And it, so definitely you're sympathetic with the husband and wife who are going out and killing them and using them as their meat that everyone, of course, loves. And their business is doing really well now. Their romance has been rekindled. And so it's fun and cute. If it shows up on some streaming or something, I'd recommend. I think I give it 3.5. And they have the cutest fucking dog ever in this. It's a tan pit bull named Chubster. Oh, he's so cute. He's a good boy.
Does he eat vegans?
Yes, he does. All right. So I watched a couple of shorts in theater, but I didn't write them down. I forgot what they are.
Yeah. I just kind of thumbed through some of the Short Fuses programming, and I watched two of them straight through.
Okay.
Wall Number 4. Did that play before yours? It's about, it was a short from the Netherlands, which is about an audience in a movie theater watching this dramatic movie.
No.
And like this love scene going on, and the audience starts mocking the performances and like yelling, this movie sucks. You know, everybody's kind of agreeing with them, mm-hmm. throwing popcorn. And then the actors in the scene on screen turn to the audience and they're like, fuck you. This is hard work. You know, like, I'm trying to concentrate here. So all these people are kind of chiming in, and there's this battle where the actors kind of come out of the screen and take out the theater. It was entertaining.
Okay.
8 minutes. Really good. I do recommend that one. And then I watched one which was about 20 minutes long called Night of the Living Dicks.
I did not see that.
So title alone, I was like, okay, this seems interesting. It's Finnish. But it starts off kind of funny with this woman. She's on a news program and she's arguing why she and other women are so put off and irritated by men just, you know, sending them random dick pics, basically. And it's, the setup's funny. It's because she's actually on this program where she has to argue it, because she's arguing against a man who's like, it's just something that's natural. It just has to be done. It's part of the body. You know, it's fine. So that I thought was humorous.
Okay.
And she ends up finding these pair of glasses. She leaves the program, goes home, and she's all put off by it and upset. And I forgot whose glasses it was. She finds a pair of glasses. It was either the man's or the actual moderator of the interview, but she puts these glasses on. Or no, I think it was the cameraman's.
Okay.
And she puts these glasses on, and it's very They Live. When she puts these glasses on, she looks at men, mm-hmm. and they're all dicks.
Oh.
Like, the makeup's funny. The head is basically, their face is just like, you know, the shaft, and their head is just this big dickhead.
Okay.
Like, they're wearing these caps. The makeup's really funny, but it just becomes completely just drawn out.
Okay.
And then she starts seeing some women that have like vagina faces and stuff. It sounds a lot better than I'm making out. At the end, there's this climax. But I had to look it up because I was like, did a woman write this? You know, mm-hmm. I might think it's funnier if it did, but it's just like some dude who's like, you know, kind of punk rocker. And I was just like, it didn't work for me.
All right.
Especially with that runtime, 20 minutes.
Yeah, I could see that.
Night of the Living Dicks. I could see like these being added to Shudder or something.
Yeah.
But those were the only two I bought.
I mean, dick joke can only go so long.
It would have been better like 10 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. Mad God. Mm-hmm. I have been waiting for this movie for 2 years because 2 years ago, Fantastic Fest was a documentary on Phil Tippett. I think it was called Mad Gods and Monsters. And he mentioned working on this film. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. I can't wait to watch this. What did you think?
I mean, I liked it. I liked it more than After Blue.
Yeah.
But visually, it's just... there's nothing you can do but kind of applaud and get lost to what was happening. Because yeah, he was been fabricating and like animating mm-hmm. these worlds and characters since 1987.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, just decades of work and it's stop motion.
Yes.
So there's are some animated features, but it's all stop motion. So that always fascinates me. Anything like that. Ray Harryhausen and, you know, the Tim Burton movies, those are always fun to watch.
Yeah. I think I built it up so much in my head, but I wasn't thinking through like it's an hour and a half of stop motion without much of a narrative.
Yeah.
So, it's one of those things where like I don't want to say that I wish it was a short film, but I do. But then because I don't want to like detract from what Tippett has done because it's amazing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that it's. It's a hard movie to recommend unless you're someone who's just there for the visual aesthetics. But again, it's like, okay, it's 90 minutes of this versus maybe like have it in broken up into parts. So that
right, which is I think how he originally
I thought
was releasing
so too because that's how I had it added to my Letterboxd watch
the snippets,
list. Yeah. They had it was like Mad God Part 1, Part 2, and I think Part 3 even, and I was like, okay. That would have made more sense to me that way. Like, and I would have like, if it had been released that way, I would have been like, okay, day one of online, you know, Fantastic Fest at Home,
right?
Part one, and then part two, part I that would have been more digestible for me. But
yeah, I think I agree with that.
My eyes started wandering around 30, 40 minutes, and I was like, all right.
Yeah, this is something to put on like if you're. You know, tripping or something.
Yeah. Oh, that, like, damn it. I should have got stoned before that. Oh, well.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a visual fest. Like, it's just eye candy. Like you said, there's no story, in my opinion. I mean, I'm sure there is, but
yeah.
I can't really follow.
There's
the ending I remember was really cool.
Yeah. No, I thought everything was great, but at the same time, I'm like, it's hard to stay focused and stuff like that. So. Okay. I think we have a couple more. I don't want to end on a negative note. So
yeah,
Black Friday, I watched this movie and then I think I initially gave it 2 stars cause I was just like, whatever, it was dumb. And then I walked away, but then I kept thinking about it for some reason and I kept getting more and more angry. And then what I realized I was mad about is how fucking lazy this movie is.
100%. This movie put me in a bad mood.
Okay.
Like as soon as it started, I mean, first off, I looked at the cast list and it has Bruce Campbell.
Yes.
So I was like, okay, let's watch it. It has Michael J. White, you know, Black Dynamite himself is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Devin Sawa is in it. Yeah. I'm not a fan of his.
I know the ladies.
I've seen his name
him.
Everywhere, but
yeah.
And the director is Casey Tebow, who has 2 Aerosmith documentaries out there. He has one on the band and one on Steven Tyler.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, let's see. Black Friday. I like holiday horror movies. You know, I think they're fun when done well.
Yeah.
This one. So it's about Black Friday or Green Friday or whatever you want to call it. But it takes place at this Toys R Us type shop called We Love Toys. And I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I worked at Toys R Us for like 5 years.
Did you?
Yeah, I was the store manager. I got the keys to the store. I opened up the one on Parmer.
Okay.
I got hired on as soon as I moved, a lot like these characters. So first off, the people who wrote this have never worked retail, I think. I mean,
I wholeheartedly agree. I worked retail. I mean, I haven't worked retail in like 20 years, but still.
Yeah, I mean, same. I found it the way they treated everybody in there was just insulting towards retail workers. Like everybody, and believe me, it's true. A lot of people are unhappy that they're working retail.
Right.
But when I moved to Austin, my first job was working at Toys R Us. And like some of these characters, I did it to save money because I was going to school. I was paying for my own school. I was paying for rent. You know, I was paying for my way of living.
Yeah.
And I kept telling myself, this is just for when I get a real job, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
I think that's uttered in this movie. But I met some of the coolest people. I got paid really well. That's why I stayed so long. I just moved up in the ranks and stuff.
Yeah.
But these characters, they just keep talking about like wasted potential, you know, kind of insulting each other. The cast, it was so off-putting. And it just really, really bothered me overall how they just portrayed people in retail and how they reacted to, nobody likes working on Black Friday, but
right.
That was when you kind of knew you geared up, you know, working overtime, like with any job. I mean, let's be real. All jobs suck.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, retail specifically can suck, but a lot of people love it. And I don't know that whole mindset and the way they approached employees work in retail, that bothered me right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that Devon Sawa character. They kept talking about how, like, you know, he wants to be a great dad. And I don't know. He annoyed me altogether. But then you get to the special effects. Like, I liked some of the zombie makeup work.
That I was think happening. That's essentially why I gave it 2 stars. I was like, okay, there's some decent gore in this. Like, fine, whatever.
And but then some of the effects were just like that big. It was like an inflatable with the pink light.
Yeah.
In it, like the alien monster.
Whatever it was. Yeah.
I thought this was terrible. I mean, I did not like anything about it.
What struck me is I was here's what I think happened. Somebody realized, writer, director, whoever, that there is no Black Friday horror movie yet.
Yeah.
And was like, oh shit, I should get that made so that it gets I'm predicting, I have no idea when this is getting released. I'm assuming it's going to get released Thanksgiving week.
Right.
So they rushed to get this movie made and put no thought into, you know, having any, I didn't care about anybody in this movie at all.
The whole thing was confusing. It just like, it starts and they're zombies and then it just escalates and
there's no explanation other than like they turn into zombies and then the zombies are being collected in this big blob like character that is all of the shoppers as this one sort of evil entity. But yeah, no thought going into, because this could have been a fun idea, like the idea of like shoppers gone mad,
right,
kind of thing. Like not something that would necessarily be for me, but you know.
I think is it the beginning of Krampus?
Oh, yeah. I think they have.
The credits are them kind of like running into.
I think so, yeah.
That's funny. I mean, you know, Black Friday shoppers obviously can get way out of hand. And they display this to stupid exaggerations, like old ladies ripping a teddy bear from somebody's hand and like punching, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like.
Well, even.
We get it.
It wasn't even done as like extreme as it could have been, because the setting for it, wherever they shot this, it didn't even look like a toy store. It looked like a Big Lots that was going out of business and like half the shelves were empty.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not what a fucking toy store looks like on Black Friday.
No,
like,
yeah, that irritated me too.
Okay, you noticed that? Okay, because I was like, where are they shooting this movie? Like a fucking like Big Lots or something? Like there's toys in there, but there's all this other like weird shit in there. And it just... Oh my God, this movie was, yeah. So I actually downgraded my score after I might even bump it down again. Now that I'm talking about it, I'm getting mad again. I might bump it down again.
Yeah, I think I gave it a higher rating than it deserves. But Bruce Campbell he was funny at first, but then he becomes very, I mean, just the dialogue.
Yeah.
And it's just so predictable. I mean, everything is It's just like, so when you think of Black Friday shoppers and retailers, what do you think they would talk like? And there's no creativity in this at all.
Yeah. I didn't like anything about this movie.
Yeah.
All right. So Black Friday, hard no from both of us.
It's true.
Lance actually
hated it.
Oh my God.
It put me in a bad mood. Movies usually don't do that. This one did.
Oh, okay.
And I was mean to everybody for the rest of the day. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. Let's end this on a good note then. Because yes. I know we both really like, I think I texted you about this too. And I was like, I need you to watch this because I need to know what you think about this movie. This is not a new film. This is a restoration. Vinegar Syndrome just put this out. So some of you might have this at home already. A Devil Story.
Yes.
And God damn, I wish I had watched this one in theater. Like, I know I said, like, anything that's going to be at home, I'm going to watch at home. But just to hear people groan and cheer at the same time in this movie would have been fantastic. It's this absurd and repetitive French trash horror movie. It's got a great score, an adorable black cat, a very vocal black horse, an Egyptian mummy, a disfigured man in a Nazi uniform, and this huge gothic castle-like house. If you're a fan of Jean Roland and Bleeding Skull, this is your movie, folks.
Yeah, it's actually covered in Bleeding Skull's 1980s trash horror odyssey, so this will probably be my pick for Horror Gives Back.
Nice, yeah.
But yeah, they love their, it's very repetitive. You get scenes of, you know, certain characters screaming for a good minute in so much. They love their blood splurting practical effect.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, blowing out the blood, and they focus in on that for a long time. I saw a lot of hate out there on Letterboxd and beyond, understandably.
How dare you, people?
No, I mean, this. I get if you're confused or just off put by this, but to me, I found it moved way too fast for me to get irritated or turned off by what I was watching. So there's this one scene when, I mean, we don't have to break down the summary or anything.
No.
There's really nothing to break down. You just have to see it to believe it. But there is this scene where this Egyptian like sarcophagus just kind of falls from this ship that's beached up on this hill. And a mummy pops out. And when that mummy popped out, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I was watching this by myself late at night after I got your text.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm definitely watching it tonight. I literally threw my hands up. in excitement and in frustration, and I was just blown away by it. I was tempted to watch this one again the next day, but I can't wait to pick this up. I need to pick it up from Vinegar Syndrome. But yeah, like you said, there's an old man who spends hours and probably hundreds of dollars on ammo shooting at this horse that's just running around. Damn horse.
In a circle, like over and over again.
Yeah.
It's so repetitive to the point where like... You know, something like it's a joke that goes on for too long. And so then it goes on for so long that it starts being funny again because it's so absurd.
It's spread out too. Like it first happens, you're like, okay, he's trying to shoot the horse. Okay, we get it. But, and then you'll go to another scene with this, you know, crazy story. But you go back to the old man like three or four times, he's still shooting at this goddamn horse. And the horse is just neighing and just running around. It's different cut scenes, different times of day. Like when it shows the old man and the horse, it's so good. It's DIY perfection.
It is.
And there's zombies. Well, there's this one zombie that looks just like an Ugnaught. Do you know what an Ugnaught is from Star Wars? They're the creatures or the species that put Han Solo in the Carbonite.
Yeah, they got like the pig face, right?
Yeah. And that's what that zombie looks like.
Though. It does.
Okay. Just grunts and this was definitely one of my favorites of the festival.
What were some of your other favorites?
I would have to say, I mean, aside from Devil's Story, number 10 and The Timekeepers of Eternity.
Yeah. Same. I think so too. I could easily say like Titan and Lamb and Benedetta, but those are going to be like huge white releases. So to focus on like the smaller ones. Devil Story for sure. Definitely pick that up from Vinegar Syndrome. Timekeepers of Eternity. Same. I really liked that one. I like Midnight. I didn't love it, but Number 10 was definitely a favorite. Like at the end, I was just like, what? This is amazing. And I guess anything else that I saw in theater, like if you get a chance to see the Guar documentary, even if you're not a fan, it's fun. And I definitely recommend that one as well. And Snakes was a lot of fun. So when that Warped and Faded book comes out, be sure to pick that up and you can learn more about that movie and Weird Wednesday and AGFA and all that good stuff. That's available from Mondo Books. And then next week, we've got Lance's pick and our special guest. You want to remind folks about that?
Yeah, we're going to be covering Night Angel and screenwriter producer Joe Augustine. I've been pronouncing it Augustine.
Oh.
But it's Augustine.
Oh, okay.
So I apologize beforehand, or I apologize now about that. But he'll be joining us talking about Night Angel. I'm really excited about it. Also, all the Night of the Demons franchise. So it's going to be a fun little Halloween episode.
Yeah, looking forward to it. All right, if you are not already, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Slasher, all at Unsung Horrors. You can follow me on Letterboxd, Twitter, and Instagram, all at Hex Massacre.
And I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd at L Scheibe.
Yeah. If you want to kind of get back and see what some of our ratings were for these movies, you can follow us on Letterboxd for those. Otherwise, we'll see you back next week for Night Angel. Night, y'all.
Bye, everybody.
You're listening to the Prescribed Films Podcast Network, home to hundreds of hours of free podcast entertainment. The shows on this network all have a common goal: providing you with the best discussions about movies and other forms of entertainment media. The PFPN hopes to fill your earholes with audio joy. Visit our website with links to all the other amazing shows at www.thepfpn.com. Thanks for listening.